love him or hate him, most of you are upset with him. And the reason why you're upset with him is the continuing use of executive order when it comes to dealing with issues. And this is not the first time this president has issued executive orders as it relates to guns. He did it after Sandy Hook, and you can tell what a big difference it made. But here's the bottom line. Where, no matter where you fall on this whole thing politically, it is what he's doing legal. And if it is legal, there's not a whole lot you can do about it, right? Michael Green joins us, constitutional law professor at William & Mary. And I think people get upset with the whole idea of executive action. Not that presidents haven't always used it. They have. It just feels like this president does nothing but use it. Then again, he can't get his programs through Congress.
Right. So, you know, it's interesting. There's also a Second Amendment challenge that one might make. So you can think of sort of two ways that the Obama's action could be challenged. One is under the Second Amendment, where if it's in violation of the Second Amendment, it would be in violation even if Congress did it, right? The other question is whether the fact that it's done through executive action is what's what makes it illegal. And by the way, it's worthwhile only focusing on this broadened interpretation of who a firearms dealer is. The other things that Obama's recommending, increased investment in access to mental health care and increased funding for ATF agents and for personnel to perform criminal background checks and so on, there's really no possible legal challenge there. So the real question is just who's a firearms dealer, and now he's suggesting this broader interpretation that it's going to capture people who are selling over the Internet or at gun shows. You know, I thought it'd be worthwhile to talk about the Second Amendment issue first.
Right. I mean, the Second Amendment, I think, is very broadly interpreted by a lot of people. It really, it's a very, very short amendment. It is not very specific, and it's open to legal interpretation
right.
on a continual basis.
Right. Although it's worth saying, well, a couple things. First of all, the Supreme Court's been really clear that reasonable restrictions on firearms is compatible with the Second Amendment. That's true for all constitutional amendments. Basically, they're all not absolute and are subject to reasonable restrictions. It's also, I think, worth mentioning that the right is to keep and bear arms, not to sell arms. I'm not saying that restrictions on the sale of arms wouldn't be possibly constitutionally infirm, but the focus really is on the person buying and then subsequently using for constitutionally permissible purposes, like self-defense and so on. That's really the focus. So the real question is whether these restrictions, the Second Amendment question, is whether these restrictions would impede someone's ability to keep and bear arms. And when it's put that way, I can't really see how the argument would work. I mean, all somebody who wants to have access to a firearm has to do is just go to a licensed dealer, the way most people do already. So I got to say that I don't see much as far as the Second Amendment challenge is concerned, but there's also this different question, whether the fact that Obama did it through executive order rather than the decision going through Congress, whether that makes the decision illegal.
We're
and here, actually, the statutory language, so this is in the Brady Act, the language that Obama's interpreting, is whether someone's engaged in the business of selling firearms. That's not Obama's language. That was Congress's language. And it's vague, of course. And so the real question here is whether the decision to go after people who are selling on the Internet or selling at gun shows, whether that's a reasonable interpretation of that language. And
right.
I have to say again, I think it is. I can't. I can imagine an alternative interpretation.
Sure.
But if you're thinking about someone who's engaged in repeated sales.
Right. But what if you're an individual, Professor? You're an individual who just happens to own a lot of weapons. Let's say you have, 15 or 20 weapons, and every now and again you go on the Internet and get rid of one.
Yeah. I mean, there's obviously going to be borderline cases, or, well, let's use a really extreme case where it's someone who simply gives firearms to, say, a family member. I think if that were considered to be under the statutory language, that would be illegal, right? That would be an a legally impermissible interpretation of language. So we can definitely imagine decisions by ATF that would be illegal. The real question is, how far ATF is actually going to go.
Right. And here's the bottom line, Professor. We have a slew of gun laws already on the books that we do a very, very poor job of enforcing. So no matter what is being proposed here, who says, that anybody's going to do a decent job of enforcing it anyway?
Well, that's, you know, that's not my department.
Well, I understand. I understand. Let me ask you this as in a closing moment here, Michael Green, about what the president said yesterday. I realize I'm asking you a public relations question, but I think what has gotten the attention of a lot of people, and maybe it was just... Maybe it's telling, maybe it isn't telling about this particular president, but the only time he ever referred to the Constitution, he referred to the fact that he knows about that piece of paper. He referred to the Constitution as that piece of paper. I know it means more than a piece of paper to you. I mean, is that a Freudian slip or what?
Gosh, I really don't know. Actually, I didn't hear him say that. It's funny, you know, it's kind of common among law professors, which, of course, he was at one time, to think of the Constitution as a piece of paper because we're so used to the varied interpretations that are offered either by other law professors or even by the Supreme Court over time. So it's harder for us, I guess we get rather cynical, harder for us to be as wedded to a particular interpretation, excuse me, of any provision in the Constitution. So that may be kind of an occupational hazard that he... That Obama himself, as a former constitutional law professor, was subject to. I'm not sure. I can't say really much else about that.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if that would strike a chord with you, because obviously you kind of live and breathe the Constitution. I would think it means more than a piece of paper to you.
Well, it's definitely more than a piece of paper. I'd kind of describe it as a kind of a practice, right? I mean, the Constitution is living because of what people do every day. It is a piece of paper if people treated it as such, right?
Right.
And the thing that makes it alive and has effect right now, as opposed to, say, the Articles of Confederation, which was also more of a piece of paper, more than a piece of paper at the time, right, when it was treated as the law. What really makes the Constitution living and effective is the way that people treat it right now and their attitudes toward it.
Professor, good to talk to you. Thank you. Michael Green, constitutional law professor at William & Mary, joining us here on News Radio 1140 WRVA.